Hello, my name is Malachi Vitor, and I'm here with Kathy Pick. Kathy Pick is the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee liaison with the Washington State Tenants Union. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today. I appreciate it.
What is the purpose of your role?
That's a good question. I'm still learning it. This is brand new, out of the frying pan into the fire. My job is to be the lead organizer of the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee. And what that entails is relaying information from our Tacoma tenants, people who rent in the city of Tacoma, which is actually quite a large group, and to represent their needs to the city of Tacoma. So they are asking specifically for feedback about landlord violations, enforcement processes, how they can better be supported by the city of Tacoma, and how best people who rent in the city of Tacoma can understand the laws, which are changing, and we have changed quite a bit, but there's a lot more work left to do.
Yes. So what kind of rights do tenants have? I mean, I basically thought, you know, that the landlord gets to make all the rules and then you just have to follow them.
Well, that's an excellent question, because that's really no longer the case. Tenants in the city of Tacoma have a lot of rights, and that's due in large part to our campaign a few years ago that sprang up out of mass evictions, mass displacements, 62 residents of the Tiki Apartments, and an additional group of folks from the Hotel Merkel in downtown Tacoma. And so what we pushed for was a longer length of time for people to be able to find and secure new housing. A 20-day notice just is not sufficient. So we now have a 60-day notice of intent to vacate. The landlord has to put it in writing. I recently talked to a woman who was concerned about her housing because her landlord sent her a text message.
Oh, that's
yes.
Nothing's good to get by text, you know.
Right? Not news like that anyways. So they're just starting with the very basics. If the landlord decides that the tenant needs to move, 60-day notice is required. And it is also state law. We hadn't gotten this passed yet, but it is now state law that they have to give a reason in that letter. It can't be for no reason whatsoever. They have to give a valid reason on why they're asking the tenant to move.
Okay, it can't just be that it's Tuesday and that's the way they feel.
Right, exactly. They can't wake up on a whim and decide they want a new tenant. This really came about out of exactly that scenario. They have to give a valid reason, such as, there's a whole list of legalese in the statute that I'm still digesting.
Because like if they find that there's mold in the wall or something and they need to do repairs or something like that? Or
if they need to do repairs that would disrupt the tenants, you know. Now, the good news is in the city of Tacoma, if there is a mass displacement, let's say a developer buys a building and they want to kick everybody out so that they can refurbish it, for those that qualify based on their income, the developer property owner is required to provide $1,000 in relocation assistance, and then the city of Tacoma will match that.
Oh, excellent.
Based on income, the person will receive $2,000, and that goes a long way towards move-in costs. Now, a lot of people will think, well, that's not enough, mm-hmm. you know, with first and last month's rent and
security deposit.
Security deposits. The point is that in the city of Tacoma, if you sign a lease with a new apartment unit, then if you ask in writing for a payment plan for your move-in costs, they have to grant that. They can't decline that. Okay. And that's in the municipal rental code, the revised rental code.
Excellent.
It's in there. If you sign on, if you enter into a rental agreement that is like a month to month or shorter term than 12 months, then you can have that split into two payments. They're not going to automatically offer this to a new tenant. The tenant needs to be proactive. They need to put their request in writing. See, that's the key to all of this stuff. A lot of times when people are asking their landlord to repair their unit, they call them or da-da-da-da-da. No, getting things in writing really is the key. And I tell people all the time, keep your information in a binder or like one of those spiral notebooks. Every time you have a conversation with your landlord or with your maintenance crew, write it down in a log. Keep a running record of the communication. That establishes a pattern. Mm-hmm. So later on, if you do have to go to mediation or if you do have to go to court, you have your own record of what happened. And mm-hmm. it's very important that you do that. Keep the notices, keep the notices in your binder or a folder, whatever you've got, use it.
Is an email considered putting it in writing?
It is. Per the state statute, the RCW, it is not. Electronic communication has not been added to that.
So it has to be through the postal system? Is that the way it works?
Here's what most property managers will do. If they need to post a notice on your door, they will go ahead and put a paper copy on your front door. And most people, if they are professional and know what they're doing, then they will back it up by putting that same letter into the mail. That way, if you know the wind blows the notice off the front door, there's a backup. Mm-hmm. But the key there is it needs to be in writing and on paper.
Right.
Text message, voicemail, email is not acceptable.
Good to know. Yeah.
And then what people need to understand is just because they have received a notice on their door doesn't mean they have to leave their housing. They have an opportunity to respond to the landlord. And that's something that people just don't understand or know how to do it appropriately. And that's exactly why we'll be putting on some tenant forums later on this year so that people can know their rights and responsibilities and not go into panic mode. We've got you. We've got tools that we can use to help you.
Don't panic.
Don't panic just because you come home from work and you've got that notice taped to your door.
That's okay. Good to know. So what kind of response can tenants give if they're being evicted? Okay, for instance, with the Tiki, they were going to do major renovations. And so they evicted everyone in the whole complex, 60-some people, I think.
62 units.
Yeah. So it was more than 62, because I know some of the units had two people living in them.
Right. 62 units. I'm not sure the exact headcount on the people. Look, that's a story in itself. So at that time, that 20-day notice that those folks received was well within the law. One of our members talks about it all the time. She came home. There was one letter on her door that said, "Hi, I'm your new landlord." And the second letter said, "And you have 20 days to get out." Now, the issue with that was that most of the residents there were in the extremely low income category, senior citizens and disabled persons who are living on a fixed income. Do not have the means to find adequate housing in 20 days.
And come up with that the $3,000, $5,000 that you need to have first last month's rent and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Which is one of the reasons why we got the rental relocation assistance. They have to pony it up. There's no way around it now. But they also have to give 120 days notice. That's part of the revised rental code as well, so that people have more time and they're not scrambling and panicking and, you know.
Well, I just moved last month and I still am unpacking. It's been
right?
Yeah, it's a big deal time to move. It's a long time.
It is. Relocation does take a long time. Considering that residents were disabled, okay?
Yes.
Where are they going to relocate that's affordable and yet still have access to their services? Mm-hmm. Medical services, social services, et cetera, et cetera. One of our members was placed so far out, she felt like she was in another country. She felt so isolated and so alone until she got an opportunity to move back into the city. And now, you know, she is able to access her doctor. She's able to access and have caregivers. That's a whole nother story. And hopefully at another time, we can talk about the intersectionality between being disabled and having, you know, and how that intersects with tenants' rights, because they do greatly intersect.
I'd see a lot of, right now there's a lot in the news about the unhoused and getting rid of the encampments and things, but it seems like time after time when you actually talk to the people that are living there, they've just had a heart attack or they all have... Maybe not all of them, but many of them have serious medical issues. It's not that easy to just get a job, move, find a place.
Stabilizing your life, managing your medical conditions is life challenging enough when you are housing secure. Mm-hmm. The unhoused have exponentially more difficult time managing those situations, and that's one of the reasons why we're advocating for prevention of homelessness. Helping people stay housed is a very important part of the overall picture of helping to prevent homelessness.
Yes.
And my heart is really there right now. I feel very badly for the folks living in encampments because I almost feel like they have a target on their back. And, you know, there's special interest groups that are well-funded that are trying to push for what's known as a camping ban. Okay.
Yeah.
There are other cities in Washington State who do have camping bans, but their wording is very specific. There was a ruling a few years ago in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that folks might be familiar with in the Martin v. City of Boise case, which basically says you cannot sweep the encampments if there is no shelter space available.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important to define those times and those places when it is appropriate to remove an encampment and when it isn't. And most of the time it isn't, because right now, even the city leaders in Tacoma recognize that we do not have enough shelter beds. Now, we know right at this time, we know that we have about 1,000 beds, perhaps a little bit more than that. But we also know that that does not meet the needs of the numbers of unhoused people.
But can we also clarify that a shelter is not the same mm-hmm. as a home? A home would be, I mean, if you're applying right. for a job, can you put down the shelter as your home? I mean, I've always had to give an address when I applied for a job.
That is a really good question. Now, I do know that recently the city of Tacoma and the city of Lakewood purchased a hotel on Hosmer. They have turned that into a limited, it's not a drop-in place. People can't just show up there. They need to be referred by, you know, by an agency or by some kind of housing coordinator. It's called Aspen Court. And so what they're doing is they're taking people off the streets. This one is low barrier because if somebody has a pet, they can go, they can be there with their pet, which is huge. A lot of, you know, people need to recognize that the homeless folks don't refuse shelter for absolutely no reason. Sometimes they're there with their partner. There's very few shelters that would allow, you know, partners to stay together in a shelter. And to define shelter, shelter would be considered either a, you know, an organized, maybe a faith-based group has sponsored a space where people can sleep out of the cold. They can, you know, have their stuff with them. They can take a shower. They can be provided with meals. Some of the shelters are only overnight, so in the morning they have to leave and come back later in the day and hopefully get a spot again. One solution that's been instituted in Tacoma are these tiny home villages. And these tiny home villages are an excellent idea on how people can be given their own space. They have autonomy. Now they're very, very small, usually about 100 square feet. You know, there's a bed, there's room for their belongings. And generally speaking, there's a lock on the front door. They usually have shared kitchen space, which is challenging under COVID. A lot of the situations with the unhoused have become exponentially difficult because of COVID.
Yes.
So, but at least in this case, and in the case of Aspen Court, people will have their own space. They don't have to share space with other people, which is very good in helping to prevent spread of the disease, the virus.
Having a door that locks is a huge advantage.
Right? Oh my gosh. I'm sure that people have been overcome with emotion just with somebody handing them their own key.
Yes.
And the good news is that a lot of these types of shelters and this innovative partnerships provide social service counseling, helping people get their IDs so that they can get work.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they must be using the address of the shelter, either that or the address of the agency. That's a really good question. One thing I do is very often I will sign into the Coalition to End Homelessness. They have a weekly meeting every Friday morning. This morning's was very brief because last night they conducted their annual point in time headcount. Mm-hmm. And that helps to inform our city leaders and our service providers on how many people are unsheltered. It is not always an accurate count, but at least it's something to give us an idea of the unmet needs.
Did they have a preliminary number?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Oh, okay. It probably takes a little while to compile all of it.
Again, this is new. I literally onboarded last week, technically at the beginning of this week, although I was already doing the work. So it's fine. It's all, you know,
you hit the ground running.
I did. It's still blurs day, so I'm not sure. Well, you don't want to be inside my head right now because it's like a tornado and it still hasn't died down in velocity. There's a lot of stuff going on in there. You don't want in there.
Oh, I know. I mean, even what was it, Wednesday, there was a woman hit by a car. And
so here's what happened. Okay, we found out that there is a well-funded special interest group in Tacoma that is pushing for this ordinance that bans camping on public property. Mm-hmm. Now, they may claim that they're doing this out of the goodness of their heart, and I don't buy it. A lot of these folks are developers. These are people who have the resources and skills that could right now just drop all this nonsense and just go build some space.
Mm-hmm.
They have the means. They have, you know, these are people who own development companies,
mm-hmm,
who could go and build shelter space immediately. It's very interesting because when you look at a map of where the shelters are, curiously, there are none north of 6th Avenue in Tacoma. Oh, yeah. Gee, I
Interesting.
wonder how that happened. What I believe this really is, if you look at it from a bigger picture, this is well-funded, well-organized NIMBYism. And what that means is not in my backyard. Well, that's an attitude that is very difficult to combat because there at the roots of it, there is an attitude. I know we have a problem, but I don't want anything in my neighborhood that might devalue my home or make my neighborhood look bad. We all know, straight up facts, there are unhoused people in every neighborhood in the city of Tacoma. Every single neighborhood. Now, in the North End, the unhoused are just more skilled at hiding themselves because they know that there's no other better term for it than Karens, people, troublemakers who are going to be calling the cops on them, et cetera, et cetera. And so what this group is trying to do is trying to give the police something to do about it.
Now, I understand that the police just got a huge retroactive pay increase.
I haven't looked at that yet, but what I do know for sure is that we have a new police chief. And the police officers that I've spoken with, because I've asked a few of them, and they really don't want to be out there
This
enforcing
isn't why they joined the force. They didn't join the force to go and harass people.
that. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And that's exactly why the camping ban is just such abysmal public policy. Look, I have read this ordinance and I remember the first time reading it through, I couldn't figure out what they were trying to say or what they really buried the lead. It's on the last page. So it makes occupying city property and not just limited to certain areas, but all city property illegal. Okay. It's against the law to occupy public space. That's their proposal. It hasn't been enacted yet, thank God. It makes it illegal to store your personal belongings in public space. So there's two things: you yourself occupying the space and your personal belongings. Okay. We know that some of the unhoused have very limited belongings. They may have a few mementos from their life. And so this ordinance would make it so that the police could go in, arrest people, and remove their belongings. I don't understand how that helps the homeless in any way, shape, or form. Because if they're arrested and they get put into the criminal justice system, that's going to create barriers to them actually seeking and securing housing.
So this
Having
criminal,
fines. Yeah, if they're convicted of this law, the ordinance literally states 90 days in jail and or up to a $1,000 fine. Now, I am absolutely baffled at how this could possibly help the homeless. It doesn't. Putting them into yet another system.
And now they're marked with this record because they've criminalized poverty. And
Yes, they're criminalizing the unhoused. Your crime is that you're occupying space.
you
You're
exist.
occupying public space. You exist. Which really at the heart of it is, to me, it's disgusting. It's taking your wealth and your power and further marginalizing a group of people. And that's where we come in and our community allies come in because we recognize the inherent value in all human life. And we recognize that folks, whether they're housed, unhoused, no matter what their ethnic background is, religious background, whatever, all people deserve dignity. All people deserve autonomy. They don't deserve a group of well-funded special interest NIMBYists coming in and saying, we know better for you. And the insidious part is that they're using language that most progressives use, but they are anything, they sound like they are, they sound
Compassionate.
like they're, They sound like they're far right wing, but surprisingly enough, some of their leaders have ran for office as Democrats, which makes no sense to me either.
But what I find curious, because I've seen a lot of this, is that I'll see signs up like, don't Seattle our neighborhood or something like don't have multifamily housing. But, you know, one of my favorite neighborhoods is the Stadium District, and there's lots of family housing or multifamily housing in Stadium District. Yes. So I don't know why they have this stigma about having an apartment building is going to somehow lead to, you know, their children being exposed to cocaine or something. I'm really not clear on this.
Right. The hype, the hysteria is alive and well. Exactly. And that's, again, that's a very difficult thing to combat. Changing somebody's actions, changing the law is one thing, but changing somebody's hearts and minds and their attitudes is an entirely different battle. But that's a really good example is the Stadium District. Dense, very walkable. People can leave their home and just cross the street and go to a coffee shop. Very nice restaurants. And it's a really good micro model of how the rest of the city could be, because there are students, you know, Stadium High School's right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's businesses, there's restaurants, there's
it's very walkable. You don't have to.
It's very walkable.
As I get older, I like to drive less and less, and I like being in a walkable neighborhood.
Yeah, I don't know if that's age specific, though. Remember at the beginning of COVID, they were encouraging people to get out of their homes and walk every day.
Oh, yeah.
So having a walkable neighborhood is definitely, and why shouldn't everybody have that? Why shouldn't everybody have that kind of diversity and, thriving, vibrant, like in Stadium and in Proctor,
mm-hmm.
you know, very walkable, very, very nice neighborhoods, grocery stores right in the middle. You know, that food deserts is a whole nother topic. We can talk about that.
Yes. But everything gets connected. If you can't eat that, and it all starts with keeping people in their homes.
Yes.
And that's why I wanted to talk with you about what kind of rights people have.
Yeah. I mean, you know, stay tuned, look for the forums as we start conducting them and we'll be, distributing that information usually via Facebook. I would really encourage people to go on Facebook and to look for the, Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee page. We have a page, and that's something that I'm learning how to manage. I've managed groups on Facebook many, many times, you know, including my Neighborhood Buy Nothing group. I'm the admin for my local group. Great. That's another great resource for low income and extremely low income folks. Go on Facebook and find your local Buy Nothing group.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an exchange. It's very different. If you need something, you ask. If you have something, you can put it up there for somebody else. It's just a way to share our abundance. And it's also another great way to build community. To be perfectly honest, that's how I found out about what was happening at the Tiki Apartments.
Oh, that's interesting.
I was the admin of the Buy Nothing group over that neighborhood. And our friend Donna Shea had asked to join the group. And I remember looking at her cross streets and going, oh, yeah, that's in our neighborhood. So I approved her membership. And then a month later, she was asking for moving boxes. And I was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. People can go and get secured housing and then the landlord decides to sell it. Well, now you have 120 days. And if you are in that extremely low, I got some statistics lately from the National Low Income Housing Coalition. They publish a yearly state by state statement of the rental situation. In Washington State, 1 out of 5 renters is in that extremely low income category. And what that means is that they're below that 30%. Median income That's a metric that a lot of service providers and city governments and county, that's a metric that a lot of people use to assess the needs in their community, that those people that are below the median income benchmark.
And by median, it's not the average, but it means that half the people make more and half the people make less than that per year. Okay.
Right. But if you're from 0 to 30%, that is categorized as extremely low income.
That seems very, very low income. I mean,
it is very low. And of that group that includes senior citizens, disabled, students, veterans, all the folks that now I have data for what I've been saying for the last 3 years, which is exciting to me because now we can make some informed decisions. Out of that 20% of Washington renters that fit into that category, a combined half, 51%, are seniors and disabled persons.
Yeah.
So when their landlord sends them a notice of a rent increase that's $200, $300, $400, $600. Those are the notices that are going out right now. It's extremely shocking. It's extremely shocking when you have a person who pays $750 rent. This is the most extreme case that I've heard, but I'm throwing it out there because it's important to recognize that this is happening to people. From $750 to $1,650 a month.
Whoa. Wow.
Now I did the math. That is an increase of 113%.
Phew. Yeah. That's
how is someone who is not participating in market activities, they're no longer in the workforce. They're a senior, they're getting SSI or SSDI, mm-hmm. or they're a disabled person. Their income is not going to go up to, there's a huge income disparity is my point.
Yes.
Okay. This year, I think, I'm not sure if it took place this month or last month, Social Security finally got a cost of living increase of 5.9%. Largest increase since back in the 80s, okay? Sounds like wonderful news, but when you factor in...
If your rent just doubled, that's not going to
make your rent just doubled, that's not going to cover it. Yes. No. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. You understand what I'm trying to say.
Well, and the other thing is that a lot of these developers, they go into they select these very low income places like the Tiki or the Merkle. And when they say, well, we're improving this neighborhood, but they, at what cost? I mean, they're really preying upon the most vulnerable.
Well, I'll tell you what the cost is. The cost is that people are dying. People who were displaced from the Hotel Merkle, we know that four of our neighbors, people who joined our group, our movement, the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee, people that I've seen face to face, four of those people died because they were trying to manage chronic illnesses. And how are you supposed to do that when you don't have an address?
Right.
As you mentioned earlier, and it's also come to my attention that three of the displaced Tiki tenants also passed away. Mm-hmm. One gentleman was so distraught, had been so traumatized by this mass displacement. Okay. There was a silver lining there in that seven people were able to move back into that very complex.
Mm-hmm. So they have some continuity in their
that
life.
Was partnership. Yes, that was partnered between the developer and the Tacoma Housing Authority. Because of our previous organizers' work, we had been tracking those folks, and we knew that those folks were inadequately housed. Months after the displacement, and once the units were actually ready to be occupied. Mm-hmm. We know that most of the people that live there are low-income students from Tacoma Community College, which is it's very important that they have stability in their life so that they can focus on their studies.
Yeah, because how do you get a good job if you don't have a good education?
And how do you focus on your studies when you're facing housing insecurity and food insecurity. And in the last 5 years that I've been associated as a student and a student senator at TCC, we've gone a long way to address the needs of our student body. And we're very proud of that work. And part of that work is partnering with the Housing Authority to get students housing at the former Tiki and now called the Highland Flats. And it's gone a long way to stabilizing other students who didn't qualify for the Highland Flats, because then all of a sudden the housing voucher program opened up for those people. And the reason why I know this is because I was one of those people. These kind of partnerships really do work. We've got to start thinking outside the box. The main purpose is to keep people housed. The main purpose is that when they do become unhoused, that we treat them with dignity. We allow them to make choices. You know, that entails building more shelters, opening up more beds for mental health and substance abuse treatment, which is another aspect of this. Service providers will have wait lists. So if somebody's on the wait list and then they go to the encampment, if the encampment's been swept, then that contact is lost. They go back to the bottom of the list and they don't get the service that they need.
Oh.
Another reason why sweeping or removing encampments is dangerous, we talked about it a little bit earlier, is COVID. The CDC has actually put out a statement saying that they don't want encampments swept right now because A, it disperses people in the community, which spreads the virus, and B, it removes them from their social structure.
And they can't track them anymore.
They can't track them anymore. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we can look at some models that have worked. People from homeless encampments have moved into tiny home villages, and because they were already established as a community, they were able to establish their own community guidelines and community rules. And that's really what this is all about. It's about not disrupting people's community.
Yes. Yeah, because when you don't have a lot of resources, you really need to count on your neighbors.
Yes. Exactly.
Exactly. So if someone has questions, how would they get in touch with you?
So the best way to do that is our email address, which is info@tacomatenants.org.
Okay.
If you have a question, or you can go to the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee Facebook page and you can message us there. And that comes to, there's a team of us that monitor those questions. So if somebody has a question. So other than the lady that was getting text to move to vacate her housing, we've come up with a few other scenarios lately. I was contacted. Actually, I made contact with somebody living at the Boulders apartments in University Place. It's not very far from here. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind lending my help. So at the beginning of the COVID situation, when the governor signed his moratorium already, this complex property management was putting notices on people's doors. Oh. And that was against the moratorium. So some of the resident submitted that information to the Attorney General's office, because at that time they had that COVID complaint form that they could fill out online.
Oh,
I don't always see eye to eye with Bob Ferguson, but one thing I do admire his office for is the fact that they took those violations during the rental moratorium very seriously, and they really did advocate for the tenants. And I really applaud them for that effort. That was having a voice in the state government like that was very, it gave a lot of people a lot of hope that they weren't going to be unhoused tomorrow, right?
Right.
So what happened was the Attorney General sent a cease and desist letter to the property management, reminding them that this is against the governor's eviction moratorium. Mm-hmm. And they kept doing it anyways.
Oh.
And so, yeah, people started getting notices They even went so far as to call somebody's work to find out if they were still working. They called to talk to the supervisor, and the tenant was the person who answered the phone.
Oh.
Yeah, they were really out of bounds with that one.
Yeah.
And I tell this story because I want people to understand that even though property managers and landlords are, you know, have the information that they need, oftentimes they just ignore it because, you know, they're trying to protect their assets, and they're trying to, you know, recoup the fees that they lost, because mm-hmm. the governor wouldn't allow them to collect late fees during that time either. But these folks were putting up notices for late fees, et cetera, et cetera. So the tenants who received those notices contacted the AG's office again, and they kind of got fired up, and they filed a lawsuit.
Excellent.
On behalf of the tenants. And I say that because those tenants, now that the governor's moratorium has ended, those tenants are receiving astronomical rent increase letters. I believe the lady said $500 or $600 a month.
Holy cow.
Now, there's a difference in what the landlord can do. We'll talk more about this during the forums, but there's a difference between what they can do to somebody who's still within the time frame of their lease, and for those whose lease has expired and they're now on a month-to-month. So there's a little bit of difference on what they can do. But these folks are yet again facing this unethical property management. And I encouraged her to submit that information to the AG because I'm fairly certain that he will act very swiftly on their behalf.
Yes.
I have full faith and confidence in the state attorney general's office, especially since this particular residential complex is already on their radar.
It does sound like they were trying to punish the tenants for demanding their rights.
Oh, yes. Retaliation. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
And I'm still, again, we have one of the reasons why this situation is so confusing for as far as tenant law goes, and I'm still sorting it out. Thank you for your patience. I'm very well versed in the city of Tacoma, but then we also have county ordinances. And we have state laws.
Yeah.
And the state laws are changing. There's some exciting things that are being proposed in the legislature. Some of them have to do with removing barriers for people who've already served their sentence and are trying to establish stability now that they are no longer incarcerated. Removing that barrier is one of the measures that's in front of the state legislature right now.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So what are the most important issues that you want to get passed?
The ones that have been proposed in the state of Washington. Well, let me take a look at my list. You know, this is a lot of information to digest. Okay. And we have people in our organization that are monitoring this. So if there's something that we need to act on, then we will happily, you know, send that information out, encourage people. If you don't have time to testify and this is an issue that means something to you, then you do have the opportunity of submitting written testimony at a specific time. You can also email your state representatives. If you don't know who your representatives are, there is a tool on the state legislature page where you can find out. I think you plug in your zip code and you can find out who your representatives are. Very important to make contact with them because you are their constituent and their job is to represent your needs. So one of the House Bill 1904 has to do with rental increase notification. They have to give 6 months notice if they're increasing the rent by 3% or more.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tenant, if this law passes as written, then the tenant would be released from their, has the opportunity to be released from their lease. So if they're being priced out of their unit, they won't be penalized if they can find housing and employment somewhere else, then they can be released from their lease so that they can pursue those opportunities for themselves and their family. The Housing Justice Act is the one I talked about a moment ago that prevents your criminal history from being a barrier. I don't have an exact number, but that one has a name, the Housing Justice Act. So folks can look that up. So there's been an issue with method of payment. Property managers have been requiring people to submit their rent electronically so that they don't have to deal with handling cash and money orders and checks. But that a lot of low-income folks use those methods of payment. So there is a house bill for that one.
Yeah. I know my parents don't do electronic transfers.
The first time my previous property managers, before we moved in here, our previous property managers were starting to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, they were starting to limit where how people can pay and where. Well, the problem with that is that the extremely low income category doesn't always have access to the internet.
Right.
You know, even in this day and age, not everybody has a smartphone.
Yep.
One of my neighbors was at a loss for what to do with his laundry because they removed the previous pay laundry machines and put in the ones where you had to have an app to pay.
Oh my goodness.
How in the world is he supposed to do his laundry? He doesn't have a smartphone. He can't load up his account. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in their efforts to make things easier for themselves, they're making things harder for their tenants. And that's why we have to keep, you know, they keep pivoting and we keep following right along and saying, you're not understanding that not everybody has access to these resources and not everybody has access to this information. Look, we're going to start putting on tenant forums and I'm going to be very adamant that we provide the information in more ways than just on social media. Because we recognize, and we have a means to print flyers. We'd rather be paperless, but some people don't have access. So we'll put up flyers and let people know what's going on, just to make sure that everybody has the information. The more people we reach, the more people that know their rights, the better off we're going to be, you know, less people in the court system, less people in the,
on the streets,
less people on the street. I mean, yeah. Let's just be real. Mm-hmm. You know, people are dying, not just our residents, but we found out that in Pierce County in 2021, 139 people died because they were unhoused. This is serious.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't have any sympathy or concern for the issues that are facing the businesses of Tacoma. Let's be straight up honest about that. We need small business. We want small business. We love our small business owners. Okay. Mm-hmm. We don't want their businesses damaged. We don't want them, you know, but most of the crimes that are happening in Tacoma are already enforceable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
people don't need to pile on more.
Businesses are being vandalized. People are setting arson fires in dumpsters. It's the Wild West out here at the moment. And yes, we do need some, you know, tamping down of that. But what we don't need is a police department who already has a damaged reputation based on recent events. Mm-hmm. We don't need them being the bad guy anymore. Yeah. We need to repair that relationship with the community. We need to build bridges, not burn them to the ground. Okay. Yes. We have a new police chief. We have hope of a better policing strategies, especially when it comes to our BIPOC neighbors.
Yes.
That's what we want. You know, we don't want people so frustrated that they're taking it out on other people. And we have a great example of that. The other night, a group of us with TTOC and our community allies, which I'm finding out are numerous, and that brings me hope. we decided to protest against the backers of the camping ban. And we wanted the community to see a unified group of people that didn't want this camping ban. It's just bad public policy. And oh, by the way, it costs a lot of money to sweep these encampments and put people in jail. It's $200 a night for a jail cell in the city of Tacoma. That would cover 4 nights at a local motel.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Let's just be honest. It's costly. It's ineffective. And if I'm among friends, I'm just going to say it. It's stupid. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. just, it's reactionary. It's dumb. It doesn't do anything to solve the problem. It doesn't do anything to get people housed. It is not a quote unquote path to shelter like these folks are promoting. And that's why we decided to organize a peaceful protest. So we're outside the Lomé Car Museum on public property, just getting the word out, getting our message out there. And we just found this out last night. So this is updated information. A lady who lived in the east side off of McKinley Avenue had heard about it. She wasn't with us or any of our community partners, but she just decided to come down and check it out. And see what it was all about and what was our message. And she came down the hill and there was a young lady holding a sign promoting the Poor People's Campaign. Mm-hmm. And she looked at that sign. She was standing just off the sidewalk in the bike lane because there's a bike lane right there. So she's standing in the bike lane looking at this sign and her eyes lit up. She's like, Poor People Campaign, that's me. And she started engaging with the people and finding out, you know, what we were doing and what do we stand for? What's our message? And people said that they could see her smiling even through her mask.
Wow.
Well, shortly within minutes of that exchange, we heard a vehicle accelerate. She turned her body to the left and a truck took a very wide swing and hit her on purpose. Committed vehicular assault. Mm-hmm. She got pushed across the sidewalk. Debris was flying in the air and the truck accelerated again, fishtailed a little bit and accelerated and went up the hill where she had literally just walked down from.
Do you know her condition?
I know her condition right now. She was transported to, I'm going to give a shout out to the Tacoma first responders. First of all, they were there very, very quickly. They came down the hill from the fire station up there on McKinley. They were there so fast. It seems like just barely minutes. We heard them first and then we saw them. They responded so quickly. The EMTs got there very, very quickly. And because their police station is in another location, the police were there shortly after that. I mean, it was just boom, boom, boom. They responded so quickly. They got her stabilized at the scene. They took her via ambulance to a hospital in Tacoma. They were unable to treat her because her injuries were so severe. So she was transported to the regional trauma center in Seattle at Harborview. Mm. It's our understanding, this is the limited information that we have, that she suffered a concussion, broken ribs, and a broken pelvis. So there is a GoFundMe that was organized, I believe, by her sister. So it's up. If folks want to donate to the GoFundMe, because she is a mom, she's a stay-at-home mom. She has a teenage son on the autism spectrum. So their family's going to need help, and they're going to need help for quite a while. So we're planning some things. We will post them on our page. They will be spread widely on Facebook. And we just appreciate the community responding. Apparently she's a gardener, so I haven't even talked to anybody about this. Breaking news. She's a gardener, and I would like to see people respond, and because she's going to need help throughout the growing season. So I would like to see some of us band together and go over there and tend her garden for her.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I think that would be a lovely, practical thing to do for this woman who wasn't even a part of the protest. She was just seeing somebody's doing something in my community and I want to see what's happening. She was curious. She was, you could literally consider her a passerby.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't come down there to join our protest. She did not deserve to be targeted like that, you know? And it's just, it was just devastating to see that happen. We had people, we had parents there with their young children.
So people can go to the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee Facebook page to find a link to the GoFundMe?
Yes, it's been posted since yesterday. So
excellent.
It's easy to find there. It should be easy to find if you're just searching on GoFundMe, because this is so new. We don't have any information about the driver yet. Now, what we do know, as I was standing there organizing this protest, we actually did put out a press release and some of the press did respond. Mm-hmm. The Cairo photojournalist was calling me on the phone at the exact moment that this happened. I was trying to pick up the phone. I turned around. I heard the screeching tires. He hung up the phone and picked up his camera. And what he was able to capture was the truck speeding away. So we got the make and model and the license number. He submitted that information to the police officers on the scene. I know that shortly after the incident that the police tried to make contact. I don't have any updates about their activities yesterday. I'm going to be reaching out to them today to see if we can get an update on that investigation. Whatever they're able to share with me, I will be happy to know, because it was really encouraging that they took such swift and immediate action and took that vehicular assault so seriously. And for that, I'm very thankful to the Tacoma. Ironically,
it's wonderful when we can work together, you know.
You know what? It was very ironic, because inside the event was our brand new police chief and quite a few officers. So it was kind of ironic that their comrades were displaced, you know, outside that event too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yet while we're standing there, while we have an active, first responder scene, there was people who were still arriving to the event, who just barged right through the lights and sirens, didn't care, couldn't be bothered to stop and find out if people were okay. Nope. They had their agenda. They were single-minded. You know, I'm going to be honest. I thought about the community. I thought about the show of unity that we were making. I thought about getting across to the folks inside that what they're advocating for isn't right. When it comes to the homeless. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We know what their messaging is. And we also know that the actions that they've taken do not align with even their own messaging. We know this. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that it never even crossed my mind that the hatred and the divisiveness was so strong in our world today, and even in our city, which, you know, we love Tacoma. Sometimes we hate it. We, you know, we have this love-hate relationship with our city, but at the end of the day, we love our city. We love the people, right?
Yes. Yep.
We want the people to thrive.
Yes.
I didn't even consider that there's so much hate and divisiveness in our world that somebody would target our protest and our group.